Hello and welcome to episode, I'm not sure what episode number it is now, we're of the Movement Wins podcast, formerly the Coffee with Joffy podcast. Today, my guest is Nazreen, and we're talking about Alzheimer's disease and the role physical activity has on that. And it's something that me and Nazreen were actually in a coffee shop a couple of months ago. We were talking basically about the usual stuff, and Nazreen mentioned about this topic, and it really struck me as something that I don't really know much about. But anything or anybody who's promoting more physical activity is a good thing in my eyes. So Nazreen, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks, Doc, for having me on.
Just for those who don't know you, do you want to just give a very brief introduction to yourself and maybe what we're going to be talking about today?
Okay, so I study psychology and neuroscience of mental health, and my area of specialty is human behavior and how can we change human behavior. And what I want to do is focus on how to change human behavior so that we can incorporate healthy lifestyles that promote healthy aging. And that's why I'm interested in exercise to promote healthy aging and avoid chronic diseases, one of which is Alzheimer's. I just want to say before we start that I'm not a medical doctor. Anything said on this podcast is for educational purposes only. And if anyone listening is worried about symptoms, then they should check with their doctor.
Yeah, that's perfect. Get that one out of the way in the beginning. Nazreen, this is, like I said, when we were chatting, this is something that when we talk about physical activity and going to the gym and exercising, the number one assumption that most people make is they're going to the gym to lose weight. Like, that's just a common thing. We're not going to be able to get away from that, you know, and then there might be other goals, you know, building muscle and getting stronger and, you know, avoiding injuries and things like that. And then we might look into, especially more in recent times, improving your mental well-being and, you know, exercise to boost confidence and help with those types of things as well. But Alzheimer's is such a scary disease, and it's not what I've never heard anybody come to me and say, hey, I want to get into more regular exercise because I want to prevent, you know, Alzheimer's. So firstly, before we get deeper into it, what is it, Alzheimer's? Can you just give us a definition on that?
So Alzheimer's disease is a disease of the brain. So Alzheimer's causes damage to your brain. And what you notice in somebody with Alzheimer's disease is they have areas in the brain that's abnormal, and it looks like plaques are forming on that area of the brain. And then the other abnormalities, you'll see missing neurons where those neurons have died. So that's what Alzheimer's is. Some people confuse Alzheimer's with dementia. They think dementia is Alzheimer's. Dementia is a symptom, and it just means that your ability to think, your cognitive ability has diminished to the point that it affects your life. But it's a symptom, and it can be a symptom of other diseases. But most cases of dementia, about 70%, are caused by Alzheimer's disease.
That's really interesting because I didn't know that. And there's going to be a theme in this podcast that I'm going to be listening a lot. You're going to be doing a lot of talking, so get ready for that. Okay, that's interesting. So why, what are the common issues? Why would someone get Alzheimer's then? Like, why does it happen?
Right. Why does Alzheimer's happen? So short answer is we're not absolutely sure why some people will develop Alzheimer's disease and others will not. It is a disease of aging. So the highest risk factor is old age. The older you are, the more likely you are to develop Alzheimer's disease. And the world's population is aging. We are getting older. So you're going to have more and more people living beyond 80 and up to 100 and even beyond 100. You will see higher cases of Alzheimer's disease. So the number one thing is old age. When we're looking at the data, the risk factors for Alzheimer's disease are the same risk factors as most chronic diseases. So anything that's bad for your heart, is bad for your brain. That can cause a higher risk of Alzheimer's. So smoking, not exercising, too much alcohol, bad diet. Those are all things that increase your risk of Alzheimer's disease. One other thing that increases your risk of Alzheimer's disease is being female. So women are twice as likely as men to get Alzheimer's disease. We're not 100% sure why. Some people think it has to do with hormones during menopause, but some people will think that it might be gender-based issues, that women might not be as physically active as men, or that they don't stay in employment as long as men do, or they don't get as many years of education as men do. So it could be any of those reasons. So those are the risk factors that increase your likelihood of developing Alzheimer's disease.
Yeah, I never knew that. And do you know what? If someone asked me, gave me a 50-50 option of who is more likely to get Alzheimer's, I would have said male. Like, I don't know why that sticks out. So that's really interesting that it would be females that would be more likely, more susceptible to it. Is there a role in genetics in terms of Alzheimer's?
So there's been a lot about genetics in the news lately, because I think Chris Hemsworth came out and he did a genetic test, and it turned out that he had the APOE4 gene, and he was really scared that means that increases his likelihood of getting Alzheimer's, and he's taking a break from acting because of it. So there is a role of genetics in Alzheimer's disease, but there's a role for genetics in everything. And there's two types of Alzheimer's disease. So one is early onset and one is late onset. Early onset is rare, and it happens before the age of 60. Some people can get it even as early as in their 40s, like they'll get dementia symptoms of Alzheimer's disease. That particular type of Alzheimer's is genetic. But the common type of Alzheimer's that you get in when you're 65 has a genetic component. So having the APOE4 gene, which everybody's talking about, that will increase your it's associated with an increased risk in developing Alzheimer's disease. But Alzheimer's isn't totally genetic. It doesn't mean that if you have this gene, you'll get Alzheimer's, or if you don't have it, you won't get Alzheimer's. So it doesn't determine that if you will or will not get Alzheimer's. There are a lot of other factors that will contribute to your risk of developing Alzheimer's disease. So it's environment plus having the gene.
Okay, yeah. All right. So coming away from the genetic side of it then, and before we kind of dig deeper into, you know, types of things that we can do to, you know, help, Is there anything like any ways of seeing early on the stages of it in terms of detecting it, knowing what we know now?
What we know now. So it used to be that you wouldn't know if you had Alzheimer's disease unless it was post-mortem and somebody opened up your brain and saw the lesions. Then they developed scans. So the most common is the PET scan. So they'll give you some chemicals that is detectable in a scan, so they can see the lesions on your brain. Now they can detect these biomarkers, which are the amyloids and the tau proteins in your spinal fluid, and more so they can do it in blood. So it's becoming easier to detect whether you have biomarkers of Alzheimer's disease. But the thing is that people don't really test for Alzheimer's disease unless they have cognitive problems. And most cases of Alzheimer's disease starts maybe 15, 20 years before you have any signs of cognitive impairment. And it's very hard to notice. It might be very simple changes in the way you walk or the way you talk or forgetting things, like very, very simple things, but it's really hard to detect. And you wouldn't routinely check or like go for a PET scan or get a lumbar puncture if you didn't really have to. It's hard to detect it very early on. People wait until they have mild cognitive impairment. But early detection is always better because you can make the lifestyle changes that would help you not develop full-on dementia. People are now testing digital biomarkers. So everyone's wearing their Apple Watch or a Whoop. And if there are changes in your gait or your heart rate variability, they're trying to find links to that that would predict people who are at risk of developing Alzheimer's disease, which is quite exciting because it's not invasive.
Yeah, that is really exciting. Yeah, just popping down to your local surgery to get a lumbar puncture.
Not going to happen.
So yeah, that's really good. And just goes to show how seriously companies are taking it as well. Like it is a real threat. So knowing all of this, then you mentioned some of the stuff at the start, and I like that you said what is good for your heart is good for your brain and vice versa. What are some of the preventative measures that we can take now? You know, obviously you mentioned physical activity being one of them.
So one study that was published by the Alzheimer's Society, what they did is they took 11 separate studies. They combined the results and they wanted to know what modifiable lifestyle factors had a positive effect on Alzheimer's disease and dementia. And they looked at physical activity, not smoking, not drinking alcohol, and having a healthy diet. And they found that the best one, like the one that gives you the biggest bang for your buck, was physical activity. So being physically active reduced your risk of Alzheimer's disease by 45%.
Wow.
Which is huge, right?
That's incredible.
That is incredible. And if you did all the other things together with physical activity, so you were physically active and had a healthy diet and didn't smoke, and had moderate consumption of alcohol, you reduced your risk of Alzheimer's disease by 60%.
Oh, yeah.
So if you can do one thing, it would be physical activity.
Yeah, if there was ever a reason to go out and get some regular exercise, I'd say that's such a big one.
Such a big one, right? Especially as you're getting older. So it doesn't matter. Even if you didn't start when you were younger, like some people will say, oh, I wasn't active when I was younger. Even if you started it in midlife, it would still have the same positive effects.
But how do you find that? Like, I'm just thinking from my point of view as someone who's in the gym day to day working with clients and training people. People like we're so addicted to, and I think you mentioned this when we were having coffee before, so addicted to just instant gratification. And that idea of, hey, I'm exercising today so that in 20, 30, 40 years time, I'm going to reduce my chances of getting Alzheimer's by 60% or 45%. You know, that might not be enough for people, which is crazy.
True. It isn't because, you know, right now, what is the benefit right now? But I think we know that with physical exercise, there are immediate benefits. Like you do feel better. There's a boost in your mood, in the way you look, in your energy, in your sleep patterns. You can actually feel it. Like I've upped my exercise the past few days and I've been sleeping better. Like it can be quite immediate, the results that you get. We kind of ignore exercise because it's inconvenient sometimes for people. Like it'll be the last priority. If anything comes up, we'll do that instead of exercising. But if we just, it's just an hour, like it doesn't even have to be an hour a day. Like the WHO says 150 minutes a week. Which, yeah. You know, five times a week, 30 minutes. Or if you don't have that, like a couple of hours twice a week. You know, it doesn't have to be intense. You don't have to be doing it twice a day. Even that 30 minutes will have such a huge impact on your health And you can find that 30 minutes. Like, we can all find that 30 minutes to exercise.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. You kind of touched on it then in terms of like intensity and frequency.
Right.
Like, it doesn't have to be going to a boot camp class or a CrossFit class or going and running yourself into the ground. Like, to be honest, it's probably better doing something that's lighter, you know, more moderate, because you're more likely to stick to it.
Absolutely. Something that you can stick to. And I think you hit the nail on the head. Something that you can stick with. Consistency. So if you just do something and you get all in, I've seen a lot of people do it. They get all in for 6 weeks, then they have an injury or they get bored or it becomes too expensive, then they quit. But if you can find something that you can sustain long term, that's what you stick with. For a lot of people, that might mean brisk walking. And that's fine. It might mean running. It might mean getting a few dumbbells and working out at home, or joining a group workout session, you know, for 3 times a week. So all of that will have, as long as you're consistent, will have a long-term benefit on your health. And it can be like aerobic exercise is really good because it's good for your heart and lungs and for your vascular system. So that's always good for your brain. And weight bearing is also good because, you know, there's a muscle brain access, and it increases hormones that lead to neurogenesis in your brain. Like, that has been proven, that exercise, weight bearing exercise, will lead to growth in your brain. So doing a combination of both consistently, that's the best thing.
And I know something that you've been working hard on behind the scenes, and it's about getting people more consistent, which is for the reasons that we've just mentioned there. So what have you come across anything? Is there anything that you're like, this is the way to do it, or this is a way to help people be more consistent?
So I've been interviewing people regarding their consistency. Like, I've been doing some research on what has been the greatest barrier for them to exercise. And I've been focusing on women. And one of the biggest barriers that came out was that time. They're busy. They're busy with their kids. They're busy with errands, especially when their children are younger. And some didn't know what to do, like with exercise. Like, they had no idea where to start. And then the thing that made them stick to exercising was if they found a community. So that has been, I think, the biggest factor for people to stick to exercise is if they like the people they work out with, they like the environment they're working out with. And you can do that like in person. And some people have found even online communities helping them, like, you know, they'll work out and then they'll share their run, or they'll share their cycle with other communities, and they just feel that motivates them to stick to a consistent routine of working out.
Yeah, and obviously that's something that I've known for a long time, just having a community to, and even for someone like me who people would look at and go, well, he's a coach, he loves training, his exercise and things like that, he's motivated all the time. Like, I'm not. And this is something that me and Patrick spoke about last week on the podcast. Like, we're not motivated all the time, but we happen to be in an environment where if I do get an hour off in between, you know, doing sessions, I'm already in a gym, like it's easier for me to do it. And I understand that someone's working in an office, or they haven't got a gym, or they don't know what they're doing, it's not as easy for them to do. But there's a really interesting quote that I heard in our book this morning. It wasn't to do anything to do with exercise, but I guess when someone's trying to get into an exercise regime, and particularly now we're in January, or this one will be going out just at the start of February, people are, you know, with New Year's resolutions and things like that, they're planning out their workouts, when they're going to train, their nutrition plans and stuff like that. And this quote is, "You have to plan on your plan, not going according to plan," which I think is just so powerful, because we think we're superheroes when we're coming up. Yeah. I'm going to train 5 days a week. I'm going to, you know, I'm not going to eat carbohydrates here. I'm not going to do this, and just all ridiculous stuff. And then our future self is just not that motivated. Like, our present self is more motivated than our future self. So I thought that was quite a powerful quote.
Definitely, because we get into this, new year, new me bandwagon. And, I hate the gym in January because it's full of people who are, full on hogging all the machines because they have their new fitness training program. But yeah, you have to be consistent and you have to be realistic with your goals. Like if you don't have 2 hours to train a day, you're not going to find 2 hours to train every day, and you're going to hate it because it's going to impact the rest of your working day. It might impact your sleep, like if you're getting up too early to train, or you're staying up too late to train just because you want to get that train. No, it has to work with your life. So that's why you just put in those consistent, small, manageable exercise programs throughout the week, and that's what's going to help you the most.
Just something else that might help people as well, and it's something that I've thought about more recently, and it's, I think I read it in Atomic Habits, James Clear's book, and it talks about habit stacking. When you stack habits together, like you might have I'll just give you a perfect example of what habit stacking is. So I go for a run every Saturday morning with two of my friends. Like, I arrange to do it. There's been times where they haven't been able to go, and I could still go. I have the time. Do I wake up in the morning and go? No, I don't. Like, because I haven't got a commitment to be somewhere, and there's nothing fun at the end of it. So when I run with my two friends on a Saturday, we go for coffee after, and I can only, we only sit for 20 minutes, and I could go and get coffee somewhere else, but that 20 minutes of having a coffee and sitting and chatting with those two is like a really nice habit that I like doing. And the only way that I'm able to access that habit is through going for the run. Like, I wouldn't ring them up and say, hey, should we just go for a coffee? Like, it's the access to that coffee is going for a run. So I always think for people, if you're struggling to get into like an exercise routine, like, don't be afraid to habit stack stuff. Yes, you might be trying to like not drink as much coffee, or, like, if your habit stacking to get into exercise is to go and have someone from the bakery after, or go to a cafe with friends and have a cake, like, that might be a good way of getting into it to begin with, until you've really cemented it as a habit. And then you can say, right, I probably don't need this cake now because all the exercise I'm doing and my goal is that I'm trying to lose some weight or body fat. All right, let's cut down on the cake. Let's change that for something else. I just think that's such a powerful way of doing it. That's just one example.
Yeah, that's really powerful. And that touches on something else, which is the indirect benefits of exercise. So the direct benefits that we've talked about on, on your health and on your cardiovascular system and on factors in your brain, but the indirect way is that you get to be more social. So, and being social is so beneficial to your health, and is known that if you have a high social life, it reduces your risk of Alzheimer's. So staying connected, being with friends, talking to people, that's an indirect benefit of your run in the with your mates on a Saturday.
Yeah. What I wanted to ask as well is there any negative effects of exercise in relation with Alzheimer's? And I'm only asking from a, from a Netflix documentary perspective, American football, all the stuff with rugby players and stuff these days. Is there any link there or anything to talk about?
So that documentary on rugby, and then I think it was last year where the UK came out with Football Should Be Unforgettable and Heads for Change, where they were talking about how a lot of football players in the UK, because they head the ball a lot, they were getting, there was a higher risk of dementia in football players. So for sports that have repeated trauma to the brain, through you're heading something, or through rugby where you're being tackled all the time, that could increase your risk of dementia because of the trauma to the brain. Injury to the brain could be damaging it. But it's not that exercise is damaging it. It's that the repetitive trauma to your brain is increasing your risk of dementia. So
yeah, definitely. Yeah, that's kind of what I gathered, but I just wanted to check it was in the same realm of what we were talking about. But one other interesting point that you spoke about as well, and I want you to just explain more, is how does Alzheimer's affect family caregivers?
Okay, so that's a big thing, because Alzheimer's, we think of the person who has Alzheimer's, but if your loved one, someone you care for, is suffering, that is emotionally draining for the caregiver, because you will see a change in that person's behaviors. They might not be the same person you always knew. And also you'll feel like pain to see them suffering like that with Alzheimer's disease. So if you are someone who's taking care of someone with Alzheimer's, you need to take care of yourself as well. Because there could be some real like burnout. Caregiver burnout is a real thing. You need to take care of yourself. You need to make sure you're getting enough sleep, you're getting enough exercise, you're eating healthy. And you can do that by going to support groups, getting the help when you need it. You know, there's like some people were like, oh no, we'll never put someone that we love in a home or have someone else take care of them. Sometimes you have to when it gets too bad. There shouldn't be a stigma or around that. And it's also important to know that what we see in like the media about Alzheimer's disease is really the most severe cases. A lot of people with Alzheimer's disease, it's a lot milder than what we see. So that stigma and fear around it, it shouldn't be as bad as it is right now. Caregiver burnout is a real thing.
Yeah, but again, just going back to looking after them, you know, looking after themselves to be able to help the person that, you know, that they love and they're trying to help.
And sometimes, you know, it's draining. You know, it'll be draining emotionally, it'll be draining physically, because you're taking care of an adult, but you might need to help them with everything, and it could be physically tiring, and you could be losing sleep because they're waking up in the middle of the night and you need to help them with that. And it's also draining financially. You might need to take time off work or provide extra support for them. So yeah, being a caregiver is really difficult, and it's important to find things that will help you as well.
No, I'm glad we brought that up, because that's something that isn't spoken about enough, right? In terms of, exactly that. Just, all right, so just before we wrap it up, the other thing that I wanted to ask was, we talked about lifestyle and preventative management and that type of stuff. Is Alzheimer's, is there like medicines and drugs and things like that that are in the market? Is there something that's...
There's two classes of medicines that are available. One is tackles the symptoms. So there are medications that you can take that increase the acetylcholine in your brain and glutamine. And what that does is that it increases your ability to create new memories. It doesn't tackle the underlying causes of Alzheimer's disease. It just gives you sort of a boost so that you can learn new things and you can retain some of your memories. The other class that have come out are medications that target the plaques that are being deposited in your brain. These are FDA approved, but they were approved it was an accelerated approval just to get the drugs out. So we're not 100% sure how well they work. Most insurance companies will not cover them right now. They're very expensive. Like the new one that came out would be about $26,000 a year to administer. And their efficacy is debated. We don't know how much it will help. It's not, again, it's not a cure. It will just slow down the progression of the disease.
Okay, so even more highlight in terms of what you said earlier about how you can prevent it and things that you can do that are in your control today.
Right.
You
Right.
can
I mean,
go
I'm
and
sure that there will be new medications coming out in the future, but right now, preventative and lifestyle management are probably, if in some cases, medication does help, of course, but right now what we have is lifestyle changes.
Is there anything else that you think we've missed out here, or anything that you've learned from doing your surveys and going out there and speaking to women? Is there anything that you can think of?
I think most people that I talked about, what their greatest fear was being someone that becomes a burden, like with women especially. I think I feel that too. I don't want to be a burden to my family. But it also highlights how scared we are of Alzheimer's disease right now, because it can be detected earlier and you can put in the interventions at an earlier stage. It's not as scary as some people will show it out to be. Yes, it will affect your life function, but someone with Alzheimer's disease can still live a good, fulfilling life. And one more thing that I wanted to touch on is that even if you get the diagnosis of Alzheimer's disease, physical activity can help you slow down the progression of disease, and it can also be used as rehab. So as they lose some of their function, they can use physical activity as a re to rehab and live a better life, like improve their quality of life during that time.
Similar to like improving motor function and stuff when you're learning it in the beginning.
Yes,
You're creating the same pathways to the brain.
exactly.
Yeah, that's brilliant. Nazreen, this has been a really powerful podcast. Thank you so much for coming on. What I'll do is I'll tag some of your social stuff in the show notes. Is there anywhere else that people can get hold of you if they have any questions or want to find out more?
I can give you my work email address, and you can put it on under the show, so
Yeah,
people can
perfect.
contact me directly there.
I'll put it all in the show notes. Thank you very much, Nazreen.
Thank you. Thanks, Josh.